Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring and We have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. If you're out across America listening to us, why, we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls till we ask for them, because, or at least until the half hour, because we have with us a very, very special guest this evening. His name is Craig Heinrichner, and we're going to be talking about the OTO and Aleister Crowley. Now, for those of you out across America listening to our program, you must understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle. It's being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and it is really the continuation of that battle that really began in the Garden of Eden. Certainly we saw its first manifestations at the time that God had to destroy the world because it's become so evil. And then, of course, when Nimrod attempted to build a Tower of Babel to unite all the people of the world, and, of course, he would have succeeded had God not intervened again. Well, this battle goes on to this very day. And, of course, it's being played out today in our schools. It's being played out in our media. It's being played out in the political battlefield across the world. And, of course, the using the threat of terrorism to get the American people to accept ever-increasing loss of their individual freedom. And, of course, to distract them from the real force behind what's going on today, which is, of course, the dark spiritual forces that have always been here. Well, Craig has done a wonderful, wonderful job of going into the background of Aleister Crowley, a man known at his time as the most evil man in the world, and certainly the OTO and the Golden Dawn, which he was affiliated with, organizations which still have chapters throughout the world, at least the OTO does, and dominates within the shadows a great deal of what is going on in the world. Craig, thanks so very much for being with us this evening.
You're welcome, Stan. That was an excellent introduction, and you've sketched the broad picture quite accurately.
Well, why don't we let you just to pick up the brush then and start developing it. You go ahead and talk.
I'll be happy to. I like to focus on the OTO, and I'll explain what that is in just a second, because for one thing, even though it's in 40 countries as of last count, and it's about 100 years old, there are very few people who have heard of it. I find it to be one of the lesser-known secret societies that's doing a lot behind the scenes. And I'll talk a little bit about what it stands for. OTO, the three letters, are for Ordo Templi Orientis, and that is Latin for the Order of Oriental Templars. It's a secret society that really came to be about 100 years ago, Stan, which claimed to embody the very, very essence of Freemasonry. And that drew my attention early on. I'm sure you've done some study on that subject. I've looked at your material. And you and I both could agree, I'm sure, that most Masons probably are just like most other people who join an organization. They don't know what they're getting into when they start. Well, this organization was for people who knew what they were getting into and wanted more and more of it, and eventually they went to the OTO. Nowadays, though, because we are in such a culture which is saturated with the occult, the OTO doesn't require people to have been typical Blue Lodge Masons anymore. They'll take somebody off the street. It's a sad commentary that people are really initiated nowadays through the movie theater, through music, and through so many elements of pop culture, and that reflects, in one sense, a real achievement of this very secret society, which has connected itself with Hollywood, with popular music, and many other organs of our culture.
Well, I think the one thing I was so interested in, you commented, of course, that one of the leaders of the OTO during the first part of this last century was a man named Aleister Crowley.
Yes.
And, of course, you would see his pictures on the cover of one of the Beatles albums, and, of course, glorified by the Led Zeppelins. And so many of our way-out bands, we might sort of scoff at these, you know, these bands, you know, these rock bands. And yet, of course, they were leading many of our young people right into the pit of hell and the eternity with Satan.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I'm going to call him Crowley. I know a lot of people call him Crowley.
All right, you call him Crowley.
I'll call him
sort of Crowley is.
Yeah, Creepy Crowley.
Right.
He actually called himself Crowley, and so the members of the OTO tend to call him that. But Aleister Crowley did make his reappearance well after his death in 1947, back onto the cover of the Beatles album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. That was in 1967. And it was on the record jacket where it said, "People We Like." And it had a lot of different faces on there. And there was one staring skinhead in the background. Well, the people of the time who were into the Beatles, and that was a lot of people, as we know, tried to figure out who this man was. And it really triggered a renaissance of interest in Aleister Crowley. And just as you mentioned, Led Zeppelin in 1970 came out with a record which had his famous motto engraved in the center of it, and that was, "Do what thou wilt." And that phrase, by the way, really defines our culture. Aleister Crowley came up with that in a book that he claimed to have received from a type of intelligence, and we can easily recognize that as a demon. That phrase, "Do what thou wilt," shall be the whole of the law, is the exact opposite of message of Christ, which is contains, at least in part, the whole notion of surrender to God, and not my will, but thine be done. So what do we see with "do what thou wilt"? We see the glorification of I, me, mine, of do your own thing, of find yourself, of human potential. And just as you pointed out, Stan, it goes back to the Garden of Eden, where the serpent said, "You shall be as gods." So it's the exaltation of self versus the humbling of self before Almighty God. And this message was ready soil in the 1960s. So this message took off, and band after band took it up. Jimmy Page, interestingly, in the same year, 1970, he bought Crowley's house in Scotland, Boliskine House, and moved in. Things went from there. The Rolling Stones got involved with him. Ozzy Osbourne did a song, Mr. Crowley. Black Sabbath, Marilyn Manson today, some very dark figures. And it's affected our youth. Many youth have read the works of Crowley, more than people might realize. Just a couple of years ago, his autobiography, what he called an autohagiography, an autobiography of a saint, he didn't have a self-esteem problem, this book topped sales in Virgin Megastores, which is a misnamed store, and I think it was either number one or number two. So young people are reading him. In fact, I had a young teenager come up to me once and give me a copy of his book, Diary of a Drug Fiend, and said, "He has a lot he can teach us." And she was quite sincere and moved in giving me this gift. But that's quite a comment that our young people are going in that direction.
Well, you know, I was thinking as I was reading the treatise that you wrote, how this idea of freedom, doing whatever you want to do, is just the antithesis of freedom.
It is.
Freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want to do, but to do what you should do according to God's laws, which is why the Supreme Court took God out of our schools and took certainly prayer out of our schools, took the Ten Commandments out of our schools, because by so doing, then of course you do whatever you want to, you make the decisions, you don't look to God. And as the Supreme Court said, the Ten Commandments wouldn't do any good putting them up there unless the students read them. If they read them, they might meditate upon them. If they meditate upon them, they might obey them, and that would be a violation of the wall of separation between church and state. Now, what sort of rationale is that? Well, if you understand that there were men on the Supreme Court for a period of 30 years, the Masons controlled our Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971, and these people had all sworn, whether they knowingly or not, they'd all asked during their apprenticeship in the Master Lodges, becoming Master Masons, to receive the light. And the light, of course, is the light of Lucifer. Whether they knew that or not, they'd sworn an oath to Lucifer, and these men were the ones who took God out of our schools to create the chaos that we see today. They knew exactly what was going to happen, and of course they've gotten away with it. And the fact that none of our leading ministers in America, people within the church today, will discuss that reflects the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely on target with that. The Masonic Lodge did have a dominant influence on the court in that period. And the people who kneel down in that first degree of the Masonic Lodge, and a lot of people ask me, well, what's wrong with the Masonic Lodge? Isn't that something like the Rotary or the Elks? And those groups are not necessarily free of Masonic influence either. But I have to answer that there is a profound spiritual element which people, just as you say, get initiated into, and only slowly are they led to an awareness, if they're deemed capable of understanding it, are they led to this in the higher degrees. And the proof of that, the simplest proof, is in the old book, which was looked at as the Masonic Bible, so to speak, and that's Morals and Dogma by Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite, the largest Masonic high-grade rite throughout the world. And he was Albert Pike. He wrote this book. And on page 321, he explicitly says that the light that's brought to the kneeling Freemason is the light of Lucifer. And he even goes on and says, doubt it not. Well, after studying what I've studied, I don't doubt it at all. It's just a sad fact that so many people are unaware of this when they join under desire to have a leg up in business, or their family was in it, and some other things like that. But they do, in fact, come under these influences slowly. One of the first influences they find, by the way, is just the insidious message that it doesn't matter what your religious beliefs are, because that's really taught in the lodge. In fact, they don't allow the naming of Christ when they read the Bible. They take his name out when they read the Bible in the Masonic Lodge. They also say that if you join as a Muslim, that's fine, just because you believe in God. You can have the Quran to kneel down and be initiated in front of, and so forth. So this is a very poisonous message, which really, if a Christian stops and thinks about it, precludes a Christian from entering and joining that lodge.
Amen to that. Well, of course, then of course we get to Crowley. Now, Crowley was one of the most important really figures at the early part of the last century, of the 20th century.
Yes.
He played a dominant force, and he was even associated with British intelligence, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He was a British spy. He worked for MI6, which is sort of the equivalent of the CIA, I guess you would say, over in England. And was well connected throughout British intelligence. Actually, in the higher levels of Freemasonry, there's a tradition of being a spy connected to the government. He's not the only one. In fact, one of the founders of his order, the OTO, Theodore Royce, was a Prussian spy. And Crowley was a master of cloaking what he was doing in some of these realms by distracting people with a lot of sensational news stories, and he was playing that on the one hand while he was engaged in covert activities on the other. And this is not guesswork. He's left behind some documents, and I have copies of them, and they make explicit mention of infiltration of military intelligence, of infiltration of corporations and businesses. And he was very serious about this.
And, of course, within the American CIA, too, today you will find that occult influence. In fact, I was looking at a list of CIA occult CIA assets here in the United States, and among them was a man named Michael Aquino, who,
yes,
of course, was a Satanist, a founder of the Temple of Seth, certainly accused many times of pedophilia.
Yes.
And, of course, he was the one who brought the idea of Satanism so that we should be free and open. After all, we're going to have Christian chaplains. Why shouldn't we have satanic chaplains? And so he was instrumental in getting satanic chaplains into the American military. And now, of course, they can have their covens and witchcraft chapters in our military. But here's a man, of course, who deeply involved in Satanism, and also at least listed as a CIA asset. You can't help but wonder how much of our military is involved with the occult.
Well, that's an important point. Colonel Michael Aquino, he actually considered himself the heir of Aleister Crowley, and through a spiritual experience in a castle in Germany, he claimed to have received the mantle of Crowley, and was dead serious about his Satanism. Crowley's considered more or less the grandfather of modern Satanism, to kind of put it in a nutshell. I know there are disputes on that, and I'll touch on that in a minute, because really what Crowley was all about was not mere rebellion against Christianity like Satanists typically do in a black mass and such blasphemy. He was actually after something more satanic. He wanted full replacement of Christianity. So he invented something called the Gnostic Mass. And it goes on in 40 countries every Sunday night at nightfall in various lodges. In California, not too far from you, Stan, and this won't surprise you, kind of near UC Berkeley, there's a large house there called Thelema Lodge in the Rock Ridge area, not marked as a Masonic temple, but they hold that mass there every Sunday night. It's quite hair-raising, if I were to describe it. But getting back to him, Michael Aquino, that is, he had so many connections. If you ever have a chance to see, a list of his connections to army and military intelligence, it is absolutely staggering. And the fact that he maintained all of those relations while they knew full well that he was the leader of the Temple of Set, the satanic cult that he led and leads today, that says volumes about our government.
It certainly does. And I think, we shouldn't be surprised when we know the Bohemian Club many times dancing naked around the big 40-foot stone or cement owl, and, of course, at other times putting on their druidic robes for their ceremonies there. And here you're seeing the presidents of the United States. You're seeing the military leaders. You're seeing many of the people who control our media and our corporations and our congressmen and our senators. The Rockefellers have their places there, and yet the meetings are held there every year and totally blacked out by the controlled media.
If we go back to Crowley for a minute, if I could just say, why do I focus on him? A lot of people wonder what his role is. More well-known is Madame Blavatsky. I think you've spoken about her and had some guests and covered territory there with her role in spearheading the occult in the West, and she certainly played a dominant role. And Crowley considered her his spiritual forerunner, a sort of John the Baptist to himself, and he identified himself with, he called himself the Great Beast, 666. Well, I don't believe for a second that he actually lived up, or I should say lived down to that biblical role, because he's dead and gone. But he was certainly a forerunner, and he tried very hard to fit the bill. But what he ended up doing by leading an expansion as head of the OTO into various countries, including the United States of America, is he started what I like to call the acculturation, with an OCC, the acculturation of our Western civilization, a true subversion of Christendom, to the point where right now we are just immersed in the occult. You can't help but see it if you go down to a major bookstore. I saw wizard kits for kids. And these aren't card tricks and games like that. We're talking about books with spells in them and so forth. And this is, I can trace the connection all the way back to the work started by Aleister Crowley.
And no question at all. Well, and of course, a lot of our Christian leaders are saying there's nothing wrong with Harry Potter. It's teaching children to read. Well, we could have them reading Crowley, too. I mean, Crowley.
Oh,
but of course, do we really want them indoctrinated in witchcraft with Harry Potter? But witchcraft and Satanism are certainly two arms of the same evil octopus. Well, let's get into the background of Crowley. Where did he come from? How did he become involved with OTO? What was the Golden Dawn? Let's just approach some of these questions.
Oh, that's a great one to start with. He started out actually in England. He was born in 1875, and oddly enough, he was a preacher's kid. And as some people know, that those relationships can sometimes backfire. He was very close to his father, who was a Plymouth Brethren preacher, and used to go door to door with him, holding his hand as a child, while his dad evangelized people in the neighborhood. But unfortunately, after his father died, and he was had a stormy relationship with an uncle, and his mother, he didn't get along with her at all. He early on embraced the opposite, and he writes about it. He said, "I early on went over to the side of Satan." Now, how that happens is, of course, a terrible tragic mystery, but he did. And he started out as a young man joining an order, a Masonic order, called the Golden Dawn, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. This was a Rosicrucian order in England, which was started out by a lot of high-ranking Freemasons to work the traditional magical rituals that most Masons don't know about. If you look at the Morals and Dogma book, in the last chapter there, Albert Pike said the highest Masonry is found in magic. He's quite explicit about it. But most Masons, you know, they don't work direct magic. Where does it get done? Well, it was done in the Golden Dawn in that day, and it's still done today in various places. So he joins this order, the Golden Dawns, practicing magical ritual. But he always had an attraction for the darkest and most sinister versions that he could find. And ultimately, sensing his talent for this sort of thing, at a gathering of Freemasons, a German approached him, and this German's name was Theodor Royce. Royce was the head of this very elite secret society called the Ordo Templi Orientis. And Royce went over to him and said, you know, you already know the highest secret of Freemasonry. You've written about it. And Aleister Crowley said, I don't know what you're talking about. And he said, look at this page in your book. And he opened a book Crowley had written called The Book of Lies. Well, what an interesting title. He was already a disciple of the Father of Lies. But Royce pointed to a page, and Crowley looked at it, and he didn't really fully comprehend what he'd written. And he looked at it a couple of times, and suddenly the light came on. Well, we know what light that was. That light came from the fallen light bearer. And Royce said to him, I'm from the OTO. This is the organization that gives you the essence of Freemasonry. And he made him a member, initiated him on the spot, and later on became so fond of Crowley that he made him head of the OTO for all the British Isles, all the English-speaking countries. And he was called the Custos of the Illuminati. Now, that's a topic to bring up because Royce had led a sort of renaissance, a revival of the old Illuminati order in Bavaria. And when he helped begin the OTO, he coalesced even that order's knowledge into the OTO. The OTO comprehended, sort of became a master rite, encompassing all the high-grade versions of Freemasonry.
And of course, you're including in that then the Illuminati, which had been formed by Weishaupt back in 1776, just, 2 months before the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. This was a very diabolical secret society. It aimed, and this is well documented. A person can go read it in the original German documents if they doubt this, or they can read any of the good translations out there. But this order aimed at an overthrow of church and state, of thrones and altars. It wanted to attack Christendom and put into its place a fully organized replacement, a one world order, a new world order. And that's, of course, it's been talked about, as you pointed out, very far back, and it's still being talked about, even by presidents like George Bush the Elder, who talked about it 11 times publicly. So we have this Illuminati group, which was said to have died out, and Royce either let it poke its head above water again, or he revived it. It's unclear which he did, but he had a branch of it going. And he and Carl Kellner and some others who were involved with the start of this in various ways got this order going. And what they did is they boiled down all the Masonic rituals and down into 6 degrees, which condensed the most focused and most intense moments of occult initiation. Then they added the secret higher degrees in 3 more. The 7th taught the theory, the 8th and the 9th taught the practice, and Crowley added even 1 more past that. And some people don't know this, but Freemasonry didn't just go to 33 degrees like a Scottish Rite adept would think, but it actually, back in Crowley's day and to this day, exists in a couple of smaller orders, very elite, called Memphis and Mizraim rites. It goes up to 97 degrees and 90 degrees, respectively, in those two rites. Crowley was a 97th degree Freemason, and then he joined the OTO. So he had so many Masonic degrees that at one point he said, if I put them all on, it would collapse an elephant, and that was really true.
And of course, now he is privy to the secret rituals, and many of these, I'm sure, passed on down through the ages to the Templars and the Rosicrucians,
right.
And the Illuminati, right up to modern day OTO, which still exist to this very day. And the fact that most people don't know about them, of course, reflects the degree of their control over
yes.
the mass media in America today.
That's correct. It's a very strange thing when I bring it up that. It's amazing that very few people know about it, and it's not very small. I mean, it's the widest and most successful in terms of number and influence occult orders in existence today.
Do they have a website by any chance?
Oh, they have. You can get on various websites. Yes, they do. You can get on the website for the main OTO in this country is called they call themselves the Caliphate OTO, and they've fought for their legal status in the U.S. courts and won. Can you believe this?
Well, I can believe it, especially with our courts today.
Yes.
Not that we don't have some good judges, but
yes.
we actually have some evil, the ones that
sit
at the upper echelon.
And you have also some other groups because, as you know, Satan can't keep order in his ranks, so they've squabbled and they've split off, and they're various egomaniacs who've gone their own ways. But there's a very important leader of the OTO. The one in this country, by the way, goes by the code name Jimenez Beta, and his real name is William Breeze. Last I heard, he'd purchased a residence in Germany there. So, but he runs the show worldwide, and there's a fellow under him who is called the head of it for the United States, and his code name is Sabazius, but his real name is David Scriven. So these are very powerful men.
And I suppose they're very well rewarded and well off
yes.
financially. Of course,
yes.
you give yourself to Lucifer, he'll
yes.
take good care of you.
Oh, yes. Well, William Breeze is quite wealthy, and a lot of that's off the backs of the lower members in his order. But then there's a fellow in England, Kenneth Grant, who is a direct disciple of Crowley, and he claims to be world head of the OTO, and there's been quite a squabble between these two groups. But Grant is a very dark, dark, ominous figure. Not that any of them are not, but Grant in particular has distinguished himself for some very explicit satanic statements. In fact, he even said one of the goals is to spread the energy of Satan throughout this planet. And he said of our Christian civilization, it's upon the debris of this society that the new kingdom will be raised and established.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're doing a pretty good job of destroying Christian America today.
They are.
And especially with what's going on in our churches today, where the ministers, many of them don't believe in hell. Many of them certainly don't believe in Satan, that he's a real force, and they certainly never teach the people about the spiritual battle that has existed since the beginning of time, and of course is being played out today, certainly in the educational field, the political field, even the judicial field.
That's absolutely right. I'll tell you something that probably not a whole lot of people know, but early on, Aleister Crowley wrote a book about Jesus Christ. Now, it's a blasphemous, terrible book, but it couldn't be called an idiotic book. It reflected a sort of false learning, false erudition, and it was called, very sarcastically by him and for various reasons, The Gospel According to Saint Bernard Shaw. And, of course, Bernard Shaw being a notorious socialist. And Crowley wrote this book. When he wrote it, we had a thriving sense of orthodoxy in Christianity, and people did believe in heaven and hell and in Jesus Christ as God become man. They believed in grace. They believed in the Ten Commandments. But Crowley really put this book out saying that much of this was mythical and that Jesus was really a figure who taught Eastern mysticism. He was sort of an advanced yogi. Well,
we're going to have to interrupt you
sure,
here, and we're
right
going to have
ahead.
To take a 3-minute break, and I would just comment that they've changed the very nature of God.
Yes, they
At
have.
One time, he was a God of justice and righteousness and love and punishment. And,
right.
But no longer, he's just a God of love, and of course, nothing bad would ever happen to you, because Big Daddy God loves everybody. Well, there's something wrong with that, because that's not the God of the Bible. We'll be back here in just 3 minutes with our special guest this evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we're going to have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And we hope that every one of you out there will give serious consideration to joining us in this spiritual battle in which we're engaged, trying to get people to understand what's going on. In 5 hours every day, I get behind a microphone, and fortunately, we have a lot of fascinating and very well-educated and informed guests who can help us to get the truth out about what's really going on. And so if you believe it's important that we do reach as many people as we can, if you'd like to become part of our team and help finance what we do, 5 hours every day on shortwave, on the internet, on satellite, on stations across America, why, we hope that you'll decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family, and it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. And, of course, you can either get a copy of, you can either join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or subscribe to our newsletter or simply send in a gift or whatever you'd like to do, whatever you feel called to do, but we hope that you'll want to help. A lot of people out there say, gee, what can I do? I know there's a problem, but what can I do? I vote for the Republicans for less government, and we get more government, and I vote for the this party, and we get into a war, and I vote for that party, and we get into a war, and, you know, it doesn't really seem what I do, why we always have more government and more regulation and more control, and that's because you're trying to solve the problem politically. Not that we shouldn't be involved in the political battle, because we should. We also have to recognize that, of course, both of our political parties have been infiltrated by these same spiritual and ideological forces. And until the American people understand what's going on, why nothing is going to change, and maybe nothing is going to change. Maybe all we're doing is simply acting as the watchman on the wall described in Ezekiel 3 and 33, but at least we are there putting the message out. If you'd like to be part of our team, remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America, our future, our freedom, our families are under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Craig Heimbichner, and of course we're talking about Aleister Crowley and of course the OTO, and we will of course accept calls as this second half hour, because in case people up there in the Great Northwest want to talk to Craig before we have to let you go up in the Northwest, of course Craig will be with us for the 2 hours. But we will accept calls if some people would like to call in. But let's go ahead and pick up the story from there, Craig.
Okay, thank you, Stan. I was just commenting that Crowley wrote some very blasphemous revisionism of, in the false sense, of the story of Jesus Christ. And when he did, this would have been fairly unthinkable that any seminaries would have adopted his sort of thinking. But strangely enough, or maybe not so strangely, this sort of thinking that the Bible is a myth and Jesus just was another wandering mystic, Eastern guru, is very popular in a lot of seminaries. It's widespread in Protestant seminaries, widespread in Catholic seminaries, and this is, in my opinion, not a coincidence at all.
No, I agree with you totally. I mean, the thing is that they've infiltrated the churches, they've infiltrated the seminaries, both Catholic and Protestant, and that's, of course, one reason why we're in the trouble we are today. There's a new book out called Goodbye, Good Men, written by a man named Rose, who points out that in the Catholic seminaries, everything was done to discourage men who really believed in Christianity and wanted to be chaste from going into the seminaries. And
that's true.
Get in, why they made their life a living hell, at least in many of the seminaries. You wonder why they would do this, because, of course, Satan hates the Catholic Church, just as he hates the Protestant Church, and, of course, everything is being done to get the two sides of Christendom fighting against one another. So if you can get them fighting against one another, they'll never be fighting the real enemy.
Right. They actually use, believe it or not, this, as unbelievable as this sounds, I've seen evidence of it, they use for psychological screening, quote-unquote, of seminary candidates in Catholic seminaries, the local worshipful masters of Masonic lodges. They are actually brought in many cases, to screen out candidates who are too intolerant, quote unquote, or too orthodox, and this sort of thing. So this is a deliberate diabolical conspiracy, and we are seeing the fruits of it in the news on a daily basis right now.
In fact, I've been trying to get hold of the publisher of the book, Goodbye, Good Men, Aquinas Press, and 20 times their line has been busy, even after the office was obviously closed, so somebody's blocking access to them. I'm sure that they really don't want Mr. Rose's story to be heard across America. People might begin to question what happened to the Catholic seminaries here in America.
Right.
And, of course, who would be against having a young man who really loved the Lord become good Catholic priest?
Well, I can even comment on back over 100 years ago, the OTO had a direct try at the seat of Peter, the chair of Peter there in the Vatican. They had a cardinal, Cardinal Rampolla, who was by far and away the leader to replace the pontificate of Leo XIII after he died. Leo XIII was a strident enemy of Freemasonry. Wrote against it, spent pennies out of his own pocket to spread things about it, get the word out. And when he died, his Secretary of State, Cardinal Rampolla, was the natural leader. So the votes were cast, and he was way out front. He was going to be the Pope. And there was a very alert Monsignor, Juan, and he had wind that Rampolla was some sort of a Freemason. And he was like a sort of Sherlock Holmes on this stuff, just a bloodhound, and was doing a very good job ferreting out the activity of secret societies. And he alerted the right people, and the cardinal who represented the Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph rose and vetoed the election of Rampolla. Everybody was stunned and said, "You can't veto this." And he said, "Yes, I can. There's an old clause and an old deal cut a long time ago between the Vatican and the Emperor of Austria, and it was called the right of exclusion." And he pulled it out and vetoed Rampolla. Well, this, I have to believe, was a protective action from the Lord, because the man who got in there, who didn't even come close on votes as a second candidate, but he was in second place, was an Italian, Giuseppe Sarto, and he became Pope Pius X, who was known for his holiness. After Rampolla died, it was discovered on his personage that he was a member of the OTO. Now, I have a copy of the old document from 1912, the Manifesto of the OTO, and it lists some recent prominent members. And right on that document is Cardinal Rampolla. So I believe the story is absolutely true. And it just shows that the devil is trying to subvert things even back then. So I think he hasn't been asleep in the 20th century. And if that was a try back in the 19th, we can only imagine how many attempts there have been to mess things up in the 20th.
Amen to that. Well, I think it's an amazing, amazing story. And, of course, I'm very concerned about what's happening in the Catholic Church today. And although I'm sure it'll survive one way or another. In fact, I was just listening to a tape by a friend of mine, and she was quoting some interplay that took place many, many years ago, probably in the early 1800s, between a cardinal and Napoleon. And Napoleon had made a remark, he was going to destroy the Catholic Church, and the cardinal said, "No, you will not." And Napoleon said, "Yes, I will." And the cardinal said, "You know, you will not." And Napoleon said, "Yes, I will." And the cardinal said, "No, you will not." And with all the corrupt popes and all the corrupt priests we've had, if they couldn't destroy the Catholic Church, you will never be able to do it.
Well, that's pretty accurate observation, and I think that that's an interesting story, and it rings true. Crowley, if I could do a quick 2-minute tour on some of the influence he's had that people aren't aware of, it might open a few eyes. A lot of people right now know all about Wicca, and they go in the bookstores, and this is in itself is quite staggering, that we have in major bookstores where, you know, 30 years ago you could barely find any sort of book on the occult, the bookstores were rather ashamed to carry it, you have whole walls full, whole sections marked out for the occult, and they're filled with these books on Wicca. A lot of people think that Wicca is old traditional witchcraft, some sort of underground veneration of the goddess that was suppressed by Christianity, and it's now come back. Well, the truth of the matter is that Wicca is a modern concoction. And it was concocted by a Freemason in England called Gerald Brazeau Gardner. And he was a member of the OTO, and he had some help from his good friend Aleister Crowley. And what they set out to do is that they based their Wiccan rituals directly on Freemasonry. And in that day in England, in the mid-20th century, if somebody joined a coven of Gerald Gardner, they would have found, if they'd been a Freemason, an almost identical set of rituals. The only difference significantly would be they'd have to have their clothes off, what the Wiccans call sky-clad, or buck naked, and they'd go through these rituals with a few variations and a little more occultism and so forth, but it was pretty close. And Crowley, he lacked the popular touch, but Gardner had it. And so he really took the ideas of the OTO, popularized them in this form, which had the ability to spread and sell. And it did. It took off, and it's all over the place, and there are variations that came out of that. And right now, it's all over. I just saw last Halloween in a major bookstore, teen witch kits. They're marketing it to the teenagers now. And they're saying that this is witchcraft. But, it's interesting. You can get witches arguing with each other, and some will say, that's not witchcraft proper. That's an OTO encampment, they'll call it. And actually, that's really what it is. Although, to us, that's not a real big difference, because the whole thing is satanic, whether it came from old times or new times, but it is significant that this is a fake. It's a sort of a scam that's put out there. That's one important influence he's had. Another one's in Alfred Kinsey's research and spawning the sexual revolution. Kinsey was a follower, a fan of Aleister Crowley. He made a pilgrimage over to his disgusting Abbey of Thelema in Cefalù, Sicily, to try to learn what he could. He even wanted to get copies of Crowley's diaries and study the master himself. Well, Crowley was a pervert and a degenerate and foretold and tried to help foment the whole sexual revolution, and Kinsey put it into place. Harry Hay of the Mattachine Society, big homosexual activist and agitator, he was a member of the OTO. We could mention in the news media, Walter Duranty, the Pulitzer Prize-winning man in Moscow, of the New York Times, who covered up the crimes of Joseph Stalin when Malcolm Muggeridge was trying to alert everybody. And Duranty played a key role. And he was in Crowley's affiliated order called the Silver Star, the Argentium Astrum, the AA. And Walter Duranty was a high-ranking member of that and actually a perverted companion, so to speak, of Crowley's and some of their activities together. We have science fiction was affected by Crowley. Here's an interesting one. Jack Parsons, John Whiteside Parsons, a very famous scientist. He actually invented jet-assisted takeoff. He's founder of Aerojet and co-founder of Jet Propulsion Laboratory down in Southern California. He was the leader of the OTO in America. He ran his lodge out of Pasadena in the Agape Lodge, falsely named. And he was a very decadent man who considered himself the Antichrist. These guys have to top each other. If Crowley was the great beast, here comes Parsons, he's going to be the Antichrist. Well, neither one was the anything, but they were very disgusting men. But interestingly, Parsons, his activities in the occult and his decadence and his evil was well known to the government. The government, just like with Michael Aquino, they didn't care. They seemed to have no problem granting him the highest security clearances and entrusting all sorts of things to him. And you can look at the influence on Hollywood while Parsons was down there.
Well, of course, by the time he was around, why our government has really been taken over by the occult. And
yes.
I think that the important thing for our listeners to realize that America started out as a Christian country, and but at the same time, there was always the occult influence here. It had been here from the 1630s on and late 1630s. Always the two parallel influences, one the occult, the other the Christian, but the Christian was the dominant force in America until regime of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 32nd degree Mason, and he then bringing these occult forces into our government. And so certainly by the 40s during the Second World War and their aftermath, we had placed within the upper echelons of our intelligence agencies, these dark agents of these dark spirits or forces.
Yeah, Roosevelt was no doubt a major player in that, and that's it's hard for some people to believe or understand some of these matters, but they can be documented. I know you've documented a good share of them, and I can certainly produce some documents which trace these things out.
Have you ever found any relationship between House and the OTO, Colonel House?
Yeah, well, he's a dark figure, and he may well have had a connection, but I haven't traced a direct one.
All right, there's no question that the occultist will tell you that he was deeply involved with the cult. And I'm sure he was involved with certain of these organizations, and maybe someday we can get together and talk about it. Go ahead, pick up from there.
Oh, sure. I was just going to say that a lot of these individuals, they get involved with interlocking associations and initiations, and one of the traps the devil sets with all of these occult orders is that there's always another initiation to get. So he'll get somebody involved with Blue Lodge Masonry, and then somebody says, well, that's not the end of it. You're a master mason, but you got to get into the high-grade stuff over here. Why don't you go into the York Rite? And then they get through that. Well, why don't you go into the Scottish Rite? They get through that. If they're dissatisfied, there's Memphis Mizraim, there's the OTO. And there are so many organizations with one more secret, so to speak, that a person tends to become a junkie in these matters if they have an appetite for the occult. And they'll go from initiation to initiation. So I don't have direct connections on paper somewhere with Colonel House, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me. It's just, it goes with the territory that they eventually connect up either directly or at least by association with the darker forces embodied in the OTO.
Okay, fine. Well, we've got Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. He called before, and I asked him if he'd wait until after the half hour. Mike, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had to wait a long time because you guys are giving out so much information. I just kind of had to slow up. But who is the OTO again?
Okay, the OTO, Mike, is a group that's called the Ordo Templi Orientis, which means Order of the Oriental Templars. And it's a very elite occult order that embodies higher-level Freemasonry. And it's been around for about 100 years. It's in 40 countries. It was led at one time for a long time by the father of, let's say, modern Satanism, Aleister Crowley. So it's a very unknown secret society, but it's actually very powerful and active all around the world right now.
Because it even has a website. This is the incredible thing. But how many people are going to go looking at the OTO website?
Yeah, it's a needle in a haystack right on the Internet.
And how do you get to the OTO website?
Well, you can enter OTO U.S. Grand Lodge in a search, and I'm sure you'll get there pretty quickly. But be careful. These people are famous for disinformation, traps, and deception.
Okay. And remember, you want to know about them, but don't get fascinated because this is a one-way trip to hell, I'll tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. If people want to know that it exists, just to verify it, certainly they can log on. But I'd say don't spend a lot of time there.
Okay. Now, the other question was Aleister Crowley, his first and second wife went crazy?
They did.
And then his third, but he never married her, but she also went crazy?
I'd have to go back and check. There were so many women involved, but what he had was a string of women he called Scarlet Women. And I won't go into the reasons for that, but at least biblically, there's the Scarlet Woman of the Book of Revelation or the Book of the Apocalypse. And he reveled in that role, calling himself the Great Beast. And I know his first two wives did suffer miserably and greatly, and he never confined himself to marital fidelity and didn't even confine himself to heterosexuality or even to refraining from young boys. He was an early pederast or pedophile, and he pushed to have that given a special sanction in his order. And as a matter of fact, I mentioned Harry Hay, the homosexual agitator and activist. Harry Hay once marched in a gay parade in the 80s, so-called gay parade. I don't like them using the word gay because gay means happy. But he marched in that with a T-shirt which said, NAMBLA walks with me. NAMBLA, of course, is a pederastic, pedophiliac organization promoting the perversion and molestation of children.
Yes, six before eight before it's too late was their motto, right?
Yep, that's the group.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Mike?
One more thing about any whereabouts of his children.
Yeah, that's a good question. There have been some, and he had a lot that were illegitimate, especially when he lived in Italy, and probably the only decent thing Mussolini ever did, besides make the trains run on time, was run Crowley out of there. Crowley had a lot of illegitimate children running around. It was sort of a forerunner of the hippie commune that he had going there, the Abbey of Thelema, he called it, named after the famous or infamous abbey in the works of Rabelais. That's a sidebar we don't have time to get into. But he had there's one famous claimant to be his son, which has been highly disputed, and he's put out some books. But I don't want to really highlight him because he's his claim's disputable. But
I've heard that the reason he was forced out of Italy was there was a question of child sacrifice or infant sacrifice.
That's right.
And whether it took place, I don't know. But
right.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
No,
Mike, we got somebody else. If you want to call back in the next hour, you can. How's that?
Well, one last question.
Okay.
Did he have anything to do with the Kabbalah? And I'll hang up and take the answer on the air.
Okay.
Sure. Okay, that's a good question. Absolutely. If you go to the heart of the occult orders and the Masonic orders, you read Morals and Dogma by Pike, you get to the Kabbalah, and people who aren't familiar with that term, it puts itself out as a sort of Jewish mysticism. But really what it is a system of demonism, which comes back, it can be traced all the way back to Pharaonic Egypt. And the Kabbalah itself was concocted by certain Jews, and it has been put forward in all of these significant occult orders in the West down through the centuries. So that's still the basis of quite a lot of what goes on. Crowley made use of it in many ways, and one of the central ways he made use of this is through some very disgusting things called, I don't want to get into it too much, but he called it sex magic, or sex magic, they like to pronounce this, and they spell it with a C-K. And all of this is just another trap of Lucifer to entice people into immorality and try to give it an aura of mystery.
But of course, it even goes back long before the Kabbalah. It really based upon the ancient mysteries, the ancient mystery religions, and sort of beginning to be codified here. Well, let's go to Herman calling in from Carmel.
Sure.
Hi, Herman. How you doing?
Good evening. Another fascinating program. I just wanted to comment on Dr. Stan. You're mentioning being a watchman on the wall, and I think there's another aspect to that. And that is that before God judges any nation, he always sends prophets. He also sends witnesses. Part of the job of a prophet is to be a witness so that someday in the judgment, I'm sure, when people say, well, you know, if it had been this way or that way, I would have done something. And God will be able to say, no, that's not the case because I had so-and-so over here and so-and-so over there. And all of the things that are the secrets that are being brought to light, it's often discouraging to hear a program like this because you think, well, gee, what can we possibly do? But why don't you just develop that a little bit?
All right. Well, what can we do? We have to have the knowledge, and then we have to impart it to others. And, of course, if there are enough Americans who really care, if there are enough Americans who really love the Lord, and the majority of people here still believe that this is a Christian nation and profess to believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ.
That's
but
right.
They certainly don't act like it. And if you look into what's happening in the church today, now you compare, for instance, divorce in the Bible Belt area among Christians and evangelical churches, and in non-evangelical churches, you got a higher rate of divorce in the evangelical churches. That's because, of course, if they're not Protestants, they're not getting married. Of course, in the Catholic Church, I will say one thing, and they've got a lot lower rate of divorce than the Protestants do. So, Protestants like to criticize Catholics. Well, maybe they ought to look at least what they're doing as far as divorce, because they say it's wrong. The Protestant Church says, well, it's wrong, but, and it's never but, it's wrong, period.
That's a good point. I wanted to say also to the caller's concern that you go back to the Old Testament, and there were some dark moments in the history of God's people, down from the Old Testament, the New Testament, right down to today. There have been some very bleak moments. But one of them, I remember Elijah saying to the Lord, he thought there was nobody left. And the Lord said, I still have 7,000 who have not bowed the knee to Baal, which was the false god of that era, which is actually still honored in Freemasonry in the seventh degree ritual of the Royal Arch degree. Baal is actually honored. But there are still people in this country, don't doubt it at all, who have their priorities straight. And what we need to do is know what the enemy is, know we're in a spiritual battle, pray, and cooperate with the grace of God, and do what we can in our small ways, and in our large ways if we can.
And I think, Herman, the major thing is to realize that it's God's battle. We're to do our best. And over and beyond that, why we can't be asked to do more, we will be involved as much as we can, but in the final analysis, the battle is the Lord's.
Right.
Amen.
Okay.
Thank you for that positive answer.
Bye-bye and God bless you. Okay. Well, we're going to have to just say goodbye to our friends up there in the Great Northwest here. And, of course, we'll be on for an additional hour this evening with Craig. If you'd like to get a copy of the program, the full 2 hours, of course, that's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we hope many of you will want to get these programs. The one we had last night was outstanding. The one again tonight, I believe, is outstanding. And we may even take them and put them into a four-tape set, make them available to people, because it's so important that you have the information, and then you help us to get it to others. And you have our permission, of course, to copy any of our tapes and circulate them. That's how you can reach others to get them to understand. People don't want to hear this message. People don't like to hear bad news. But ask them, what sort of a world do you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren? If what we're saying is not true, you have nothing to worry about. But if it is true and you do nothing, what will you say to your children and your grandchildren? Is this really the sort of legacy that you would leave them, a legacy of slavery and servitude? Well, ladies and gentlemen, those of you up in the Great Northwest, we want to ask you to pray for America and to pray for revival in our country, to pray for our leaders, to pray for certainly our ministers and our priests, because they should be leading this battle. And finally, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back with you tomorrow evening, pardon me, Monday evening at the same time. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course our guest is Craig. And Craig's going to be with us for the next hour, and of course we'll invite your calls when we get back here from the station break at 1-888-24-Liberty, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So we always welcome your calls, your thoughts. We're just going to continue developing this story of Aleister Crowley and, of course, the OTO, because these ideas play an important part in what's going on today. In our schools, we teach children, the decision is yours. You have to decide what's right and wrong. What a 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid can decide what's right and wrong? We have to base our decisions upon what God would have us do. And that, of course, has been taken away from our children, thanks to the Supreme Court and our churches, which have refused to speak out.
That's right.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening is Craig Heimbichner. And, of course, we're coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and, of course, bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And Craig has been telling us about the background of Aleister Crowley and, of course, what the forces that were worked. Now, Crowley was born in 1875. That was the very year when Madame Blavatsky created the Theosophical Society. So, of course, Madame Blavatsky was certainly, I think, probably died by about the turn of the century. By that time, Annie Besant had come onto the scene, was leading the Theosophical Society. Certainly Alice Bailey was a young woman. She died, I think, about 1950. But after Annie Besant began to fade away, and of course, for those of you who don't remember, Annie Besant was the founder of the Fabian Socialists, along with George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell and Sidney and Beatrice Webb and all of these people. Then, of course, it was a very short step from the Fabian Socialist Society to becoming the leader of this of the Theosophical Society, which was basically Luciferian. And then, of course, when Annie Besant stepped down, while Alice Bailey took on the mantle of leadership, she formed the Lucius Trust, which exists today and until recently was housed at number one. United Nations Plaza in New York, right adjacent to the United Nations. And of course, the Lucius Trust, to this very day, it used to be the Lucifer Publishing House now, but Lucifer has a bad name, so they call it the Lucius Trust. And of course, they, of course, are deeply involved with the maintenance of the prayer room at the United Nations.
Right.
What does that suggest to you that the United Nations is all about? Why it is to become the government of the Antichrist? Every Satanist knows that. Every Luciferian knows that. Every witch knows that. And, of course, the tragedy is the only people who don't know that are the American people who are paying us, putting out so much of the money to maintain the United Nations, the coming one world government. So you go ahead and pick up the story from there, Craig.
Oh, yes. You raised a lot of very important points, Stan. And you know, there's something that's not very well known about this story that you just traced out, which is all true, all absolutely true. And it is this, that exactly as you suggest, Crowley being born in the year of the founding of the Theosophical Society, he considered himself to have an intimate connection to the Blavatsky's role in her organization. I think I mentioned last hour that he considered her a sort of spiritual forerunner. Well, it went beyond that, because when her successor, Annie Besant, adopted a young Indian boy, Krishnamurti, and started grooming him to be a world leader, Crowley became very jealous, and he had already decided that he was the world leader who was going to step into the scene, and here was a rival. Krishnamurti was being called the world teacher, and Maitreya, which is a Buddhist term, which means world teacher, and the funny thing, or ironic thing about all of that, is that Krishnamurti, when he grew to manhood, rejected this role, and he did remain a rather New Age guru, and wrote some books and attained a following. But he didn't want to be the world teacher. Crowley, meanwhile, was fighting to claim I'm Maitreya. Well, we have people today going around. Benjamin Crum. He spells his name Cream, but he pronounces it Crum, and I think that's a good way to pronounce it for him. He's been going around for years, several years now, saying that there is a world teacher who's here called Maitreya. And the interesting thing with Benjamin Crum is that his group, Share International, is affiliated as a non-governmental organization, an NGO, with the United Nations. So all of these groups do ultimately tend to find their intersection point through that modern Tower of Babel that you just discussed.
I think even the Lucius Trust is an accredited NGO, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is, and it absolutely is. And even though they've moved their locale, they do, as you mentioned, run the Temple of Understanding Meditation Room. I always find that a little hard to grasp, that there's a Temple of Understanding where they're going to worship understanding. But it makes sense when you think back on the heart of these occult orders, and they go back to the concept of Gnosticism. Gnosticism is from the Greek word gnosis, spelled with a G-N, which means secret knowledge, in essence. And some people may not know, when they drive by a Masonic lodge, that the G that they look at on the building, which is in the middle of a square and compass, is has several layers of meaning. The lower degree Masons are taught that it means means geometry, and then they're also taught it means the great architect, which is the Masonic word for their God, which is not the true God. But ultimately, they're taught that it means gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, and they're also taught it means generation, which has a sexual meaning and goes right to the heart of what the OTO teaches. So these mysteries, where they think they're getting secret knowledge, they have their shrine in the United Nations in the Temple of Understanding, and it's maintained, as you said, by Lucis Trust, used to be Lucifer Publishing Company. Madame Blavatsky had a magazine, Lucifer, and Crowley, as his OTO, could be considered very legitimately a cousin. One of the founders of the OTO, Franz Hartmann, was a leader of Theosophy, and Rudolf Steiner, who was associated with the OTO, was an important Theosophist as well, and split off to form his own group, the Anthroposophical Society. So all these groups seem to intersect back somehow or another with this man who called himself the Great Beast, Aleister Crowley.
And of course, all across the world today are the Waldorf schools, which is the outgrowth of Rudolf Steiner's Anthroposophical Society. And they even have one here in our area. You know, the kids, they go there and they teach them all sorts of fascinating things and literature and music. And without understanding, the foundation comes right out of the pit of hell.
Right. That Waldorf is there to initiate children into the New Age. And the term New Age is an interesting term. It was the name of the Journal of Scottish Rite Freemasonry for most of the 20th century, and Ellis Bailey talked a lot about it. But interestingly, I'd like to mention for a few minutes a very interesting book that Crowley turned out in 1904 called The Book of the Law, in which he announced that we're entering a new age, or a new eon, as he called it, and he called it the Eon of Horus. And as you know, Stan, Horus is an old Egyptian false god. And the eye on the back of the dollar bill, which is in that triangle, is the eye of Horus. It's an old, old symbol, and some of us know why it's there, but others might be astonished to pull out their dollar and look at that and wonder what that really means, because it doesn't look all that Christian when it gets right down to it, and it's not. But the New Age, this new eon, Crowley described it in this book. What's the significance of this book? Well, I think it's very significant. In 1904, he went into a room for three separate days, an hour at a time, and a voice gave him this Book of the Law, and the voice was of this being which called itself Iwas. And this being later, Crowley said, was his guardian angel, and then later he said it was Satan. Well, as we know, any guardian angels are fighting off Satan. So Crowley was a very demonic man. But this voice that dictated this Book of the Law to him announced that the 20th century would be filled with bloodshed. And of course it was. It announced that it was going to overthrow a lot of the things that were the foundation of Christian civilization. And of course that happened. It advocated drugs. It advocated sexual revolution. It advocated what you could call the human potential movement. It advocated a full return to paganism. You can see the sacrifice of children mandated in it, and of course the OTO will give that another meaning, but nevertheless, we got abortion, didn't we? Crowley's commentary advocates pedophilia, and we got that. Just about everything you can think of in the 20th century that went wrong was announced in 1904 in this book, and I consider it a sort of dark, satanic blueprint, not a prophecy really, but it was a tipping of the hand by the devil on what he was going to be doing, and he did a great deal of what's in that book.
Now, is that book still in print, you know?
Yes, it is. In fact, sad to say, little red copies of it can be found in major bookstores, and another interesting thing about the title, Book of the Law, every Masonic lodge has what's called the Book of the Law, the Volume of Sacred Law, but it's not this book. Typically, a Masonic lodge will put a Bible on the altar when it initiates a person who comes at least nominally from a Christian background, if it's a Muslim, they'll put the Quran up there as the volume of sacred law, and so on. But those books don't really fully correspond to the essence of Freemasonry, most particularly the Holy Bible. It does not correspond. It's a deception. But with this book, we really get a book of the law which reveals the essence and the heart of the mysteries of Freemasonry. And it's in the OTO that the book on the altar is a true representation, a true book of the law. And it's a little red book. And I like to say that's appropriate, too, for a lot of symbolic reasons. The bloodshed of the 20th century, we can have red for that. We can have red for the lust that's been engendered by this order. And we can even have red for communism because, as I mentioned, Walter Durante covered up Stalin's crimes. Durante was Crowley's associate. Jack Parsons, John Whiteside Parsons, who, by the way, has a crater named after himself on the dark side of the moon by our government. He was a member of a communist cell. So this little red book of the law is a disgusting, blasphemous book, and it says the most horrid things about Jesus that I've ever encountered.
Now, you said he was a member of a communist cell. Did you mean a communist cell or an OTO cell?
No, Jack Parsons, well, he was a leader of the OTO, but he was also a member of a communist cell. And that's one thing I'd like to stress, is that the occult does not stay out of politics. Christians, a lot of times, stay out of politics because they say the field's corrupt and it's better to just sit back and pray. Well, the field's corrupt because we've let corrupt people take it over. And the OTO is an example of putting out the philosophy that has come to embody and take over a lot of the organs. But, you know, I don't want to stress a real message of defeat here. I don't think we're at the hour where things are too late. But I do say that we are at an hour where we need to wake up as a people and as a country.
Amen to that. Well, that's, of course, what we do, and hopefully our audience is growing on a regular basis. And those of you out in the listening audience, your assignment is to tell other people about our program and get them listening. And they won't listen, and just get a tape of a program. You have our permission to tape our programs as they come over and, of course, copy those tapes and get others to listen. And there may be something that some people may be interested in, perhaps education because they have children. Others may be educated in the occult programs such as this. Others may be interested in the political considerations or in what happened on September 11th. But there's something that everybody will be interested in, and your job is to figure out what it is and try to get them intrigued enough to get started listening. Because if you can get them started listening, hopefully then it'll be up to us to steer them in the right direction. Because we have transformed lives, and we get letters from people throughout the country telling about how what they've heard here has actually influenced them or straightened out to somebody very close to them in their family. And if we can direct people in the right direction and we can reach enough people, of course we can have an impact. But that, of course, we require your help, because I can't spend much more than 5 hours a day doing what I do, and 2 hours on Saturdays. Tomorrow is an easy day. We only do 2 hours that day. Anyway, these are exciting times. What a wonderful privilege it is. So our guest this evening is Craig Heimbeckner.
Heimbeckner, you got it.
Right. And, of course, we're talking about Aleister Crowley and the OTO. So, now, of course, Crowley then was involved with intelligence. Why don't you sort of get into that? We touched on that in the first hour, but he was actually associated with MI6, wasn't he?
That's right. He was, exactly. And it's interesting that you find there was an occult writer, sort of a forerunner of Stephen King in a way, in England, called Dennis Wheatley, and he was a member of British intelligence, worked for Winston Churchill in war planning department, and he was friends with Crowley, and there were some others. Ian Fleming, who is famous for the James Bond series, was a member of British intelligence himself, and all of these people sort of rubbed elbows in various ways, but Crowley was considered useful for black ops, black operations, and his knowledge of the workings of occult orders was very useful to the British government, which had no aversion whatsoever to the occult, none whatsoever. In fact, Winston Churchill himself, as a young man, was a member of the Order of Druids. Now, the Order of Druids is Masonic order, essentially, and it's still around and very, very powerful and very popular. And Churchill was a Freemason. So these men, in various ways, linked up with each other.
And I think that's really so vitally important, and certainly the occult influence is still there in the intelligence agencies here in the United States. Well, we've got Mike calling again. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, there was one question about the one previous caller that said sending a judge, before judging a nation that God was going to send a prophet.
Well, I think or prophets.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't find that. I've only been studying the Bible for, about 3 years or so, but I can't find that anywhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe Herman will call back. Herman lives over in Carmel, and I'm sure he's listening. I think whether it's in the Bible or whether it's simply an interpretation of the Scriptures, because we always do find prophets out there, of course, warning what lies ahead, and I don't consider myself a prophet at all.
Me either.
I'm just doing my job. Because prophets usually end up getting stoned, especially if they make a mistake. Why, they're in real serious trouble. But I believe I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing, but God hasn't said, now Stanley, this is your job from here on out. Although he certainly has opened an awful lot of doors to me, and I can't believe that what has happened, our opportunity to be on the air 5 hours a day, is certainly anything having to do with my ability at all. Maybe Herman will call back in, and if he can give us an exact reference to that. I suspect it's more of an interpretation, and simply as you read the Old Testament, you find it every time during this whole period of the Jews living in the Holy Land, there was always a prophet there to guide them, and God did provide them. But maybe there is some specific biblical reference. Okay, anything else you want to ask?
I wish Herman would call back and give me a reference on that.
All right, well, there is one. We'll give it. Otherwise, you're going to have to say that he is just this is his interpretation of the Scriptures, and I think that would be a fair thing to say. God always provides teachers for the people. He always provides the truth for them. But, it's amazing as you read the Old Testament, the children of Israel always repudiated his prophets. On occasionally, of course, they would rally behind them, but only when things got terrible, when times got very bad. And then, of course, they would say, well, why has God abandoned us? Well, it ought to be pretty obvious why God abandoned them, because they abandoned God.
Right.
And this is exactly what's happening in America today.
That's a perfect parallel. I'm certainly not about to claim prophet status. I'll say with St. Paul, I'm the chiefest of sinners as far as I'm aware, because I know my sins and I don't know those of others, and I know mine are pretty bad. But I do want to do what I can, please God, to tell people what I know about this, because it's important that people realize you can't be asleep right now. It's not a time to just put in your 9 to 5 hours, go home and put a video in the TV or watch some sports. If we keep doing that, this country will go the wrong way. But the good news is, if people get alerted to the problems and ask questions about how we can get involved and work together and pray together and take back Christian civilization, I believe we can do it. At least we have the freedom in this country, thanks to the blessing of God, to still do those sort of things. And that's not available in some countries. And we don't want to go in any further in that direction where we lose the freedoms. We've already lost a number of them. And I personally don't want to lose any more.
Okay, thanks very much, Mike. Maybe Herman will call back, okay?
Okay, Herman, call back, and then give me that early Wiccan stuff, too. I live here in Santa Cruz, and I deal with a lot of Wiccans.
Oh, okay.
I need to tell them where the Wiccan stuff came from.
Oh, remember, you're differentiating Wiccan from witchcraft.
Right. Yeah, and I'm going to hang up and take that answer on the air again.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Mike. Okay, fine.
I'll give an easy, short answer on that, and if they're really into Wicca, they'll know the witch author, Doreen Valiente. She was very famous Wiccan in England, and worked with Gerald Gardner to create his covens. And if they're serious about that, they can look up her book, The Rebirth of Witchcraft, and she spells out right in there the role that Aleister Crowley played in creating the whole thing. So there's an easy one to get, The Rebirth of Witchcraft. Tell them to look it up. They might have it on their shelf somewhere and they never took the time to read it. But it's right there. This is a modern concoction, and it comes right out of Crowley. A lot of Wiccans don't want to be tied to Crowley. They think they're doing something called white magic, and that Crowley did something called black magic. Well, I have some news for them. They probably don't want to hear this, but there's no such thing as white magic. All magic, or magic, if they want to call it that, is basically sinful. It's condemned in the Bible. It's sorcery. If it works at all, they formed a pact with some demonic force, and they should get out of it as quickly as possible and take refuge in Christ.
Amen to that. Well, I think the important thing that people have to understand is there are many manifestations of the dark side. And whether we call it witchcraft, or whether you call it Satanism, or whether you call it the New Age, or whether you call it Rosicrucianism, or Templarism, or the OTO, or certainly they are all manifestations of this search for the hidden power.
Right.
And the trouble is, the hidden power is there. You can access it. You can actually tap into that. You can get all sorts of rewards. But when you do that, you risk eternity, and and you will find that there have been a lot of people, I've even met them, who've tapped into this, who've had the supernatural experiences, the out-of-body experiences, the power, received the power, and of course when they suddenly realized what they were into, they abandoned it all for a very simple life with the Lord and with the
right.
Lord's blessing.
That's very true, and that reminds me of the Bible verse, what doth it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Our Lord said that, and it rings true today. Anyone out there who's listening who is involved in making gains through sorcery, through witchcraft, through Wicca, through magic, if you pronounce it that way, through any of these means, I just invite everyone there to listen to the words of our Lord and to renounce all of this in His name, and you'll find everything you lost will be worth it to in comparison to what you gain.
And I think it's really interesting. I remember as a young man, 15, 16 years old, I used to fight fires during the summer and meeting a water witcher. And, he would show you how you would witch for water with a willow stick, a forked willow stick, and, walking with that stick in your hand and then suddenly feel it begin to twist out of your hand as it was pointing down towards the water. And, you'd say, gee, this is really exciting. I can find water with this. And the trouble is, you can. And of course, we're told in the Holy Scriptures, just avoid that, avoid diviners at all, because it goes right along with witchcraft. And people don't really believe the Bible, don't believe that what it says is true, and it really is true. And of course, you get tied up with these things, and boy, you can find the water, but at what cost?
You just mentioned, Stan, one of the key devices that's reaching our children and our youth right now to snare them into this occult world, and that is divination. It is all over the place, and it's an enticement that is working. Aleister Crowley was very devoted to the tarot cards, T-A-R-O-T, and that deck of cards, he even created his own version with some rather lurid paintings by a lady, Frieda Harris. That deck I've even seen in a children's store being marketed to kids amongst other games, quote-unquote. And, of course, U.S. Games does put out tarot decks, puts out Crowley's deck. It published his Book of Thoth, it's called. It's a commentary on the tarot. So the gaming industry is very much a promoter of the occult. Whether you go to the video games that are out there, they're saturated with the occult. Whether you go to these so-called role-playing games, and if you go to divination itself, this modern craze for the Chinese version of arranging furniture called feng shui, all these things are all over the place and snaring people in right and left. And what they do is they put people actually, as you say, in touch with real demonic forces, and that's just the fish hook. And once a person's snagged, they get reeled in bit by bit to deeper and deeper things.
Amen to that. All right, fine. Well, if you're out in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're talking about Aleister Crowley. Now, Crowley probably had some friends in pretty powerful places, other than, of course, into MI6. And wasn't he here in the United States during, was that the First or Second World War? And what was his relationship with the Nazi movement?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, he was over here World War One era. Worked for George Viereck, who did a biography of Colonel House, interestingly enough. And Viereck was a propagandist for Germany during World War One, put out a newspaper called The International and put out pro-German propaganda. Crowley worked for him and put out quite a lion's share of pro-German propaganda during World War One. Now, later on, when he was accused of treason in England for doing this, he said, no, I was actually an agent at the time, and so forth. And, you know, I've looked into that, Stan, and it may well be that he was doing some British operation. It's hard to disentangle some of these things. But when it came to World War II, the OTO was in Germany, as I mentioned, and it was being headed by a Karl Germer at that time. And there were other lodges that split off. There was one in Switzerland headed by a Hermann Metzger. And interestingly, we mentioned the Illuminati last hour. There is to this day a small, relatively small, order of the Illuminati in Switzerland with several lodges in operation there. And that's Metzger's group. But to get back to Germany, there was an OTO member, Marta Künzel, who was a big devotee of Aleister Crowley and a member of the OTO. And she tried and claimed that she put a copy of Crowley's Book of the Law in the hands of Adolf Hitler. Now, Crowley, even though he was a British agent and was working against Nazi Germany, he also had a lot of fascination with Hitler. And that's very understandable that he would have that, because as he saw the ascent of Hitler, I believe he really saw the ascent of a man who embodied his Book of the Law. So here was a man who was carrying out the things mentioned in terms of mass genocide and so forth. And Crowley had a fascination with Hitler. Now, I'm not sure that Marta Künzel ever succeeded in getting that book in Hitler's hands. The devil doesn't have to work directly through all these channels. When he gets a puppet out there, he gets a puppet out there. But it's true that Crowley bragged that Hitler quoted basically from his Book of the Law. And that could well be just Crowley's bragging, because he was a blowhard and a liar like most of these egomaniacs who run these occult orders. And as I said, working for England, we know that there was a, you know also about the Yalta Conference, where Churchill, the Freemason, and Roosevelt, the Freemason, got together with Stalin and made their deals behind the scenes, and we got out of that Operation Keel Hall. I heard you talking about that recently, Stan, and that was a betrayal of people who were fleeing Soviet tyranny back into their hands to be massacred and interned in camps under the command of Eisenhower. Our government was involved with these things. The British government was involved with these things. And as I mentioned, one of Crowley's men was involved covering for Stalin. So whatever roles they played, you had demonic forces working on various fronts in various countries, and they tended to intersect at certain points, even if they're working for a certain government.
Well, you know, there's no question at all that Hitler was very deeply involved with the occult. And this, of course, is what has been suppressed through the years, is that the energizing force behind Hitler, the reason he was able to really control the German population, first of all, he was involved with the occult, and secondly, the British government was helping him. By the British government, I'm talking about a group that was known as the Cliveden Set, made up of Lord Astor, and all the people who were, of course, by the 1930s, were the disciples of Cecil John Rhodes and his occult movement. And it was the Round Table Group at that time, which was the really the front organization for the Cecil Secret Society that Cecil Rhodes created, that encouraged Adolf Hitler. And what few people understand is that when Hess flew back from Germany to England, or flew from Germany to England. His purpose was to contact the Roundtable Group, because, of course, the Germans felt that they were very sympathetic to the Nazis because they'd encouraged them at every step and helped them in their ascent to power.
That's right.
That is so little known today, and yet it is recorded, and we'll be glad to give you the references if you want them. We'll be right back. We've got 3 minutes again, Craig.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us or here in the Central Coast of California, we hope that many of you will be interested in becoming part of our family, the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which is how we're able to do what we do and reach out across America on a regular basis with the news behind the news, the story behind the story, and make people aware of the various forces that are at work within our society, the dark and sinister spiritual forces working behind the scenes, intent upon destroying the Christian influence within modern-day society. And that's really why we're in the trouble we are today. There is an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy Christian America. Now, of course, many ministers will deny this is a Christian country. And yet, of course, if you read the writings of our Founding Fathers, the decisions of our state Supreme Courts, the decisions of our federal Supreme Court, they all knew we were a Christian country. A recent poll said 67% of Americans believe America was a Christian country. So why is it so many ministers say it's not a Christian country? Because they've been indoctrinated in their seminaries, and of course the books that they're allowed to read and given by people who purport to be Christians, and they're truly not, are simply using their positions to, destroy the belief of the leaders or alter the faith of our leaders, so that the ministry is not doing what it should be doing, and that is acting as a shepherd for the sheep. Well, our job is to set the record straight and to give you the sources of reference and the documentation for everything we say so that you can research these things on your own and then help us to reach people across America from sea to shining sea. And so we ask you to, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or certainly you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. But we could certainly use your help, we'll appreciate your help, and we'd love to welcome you into the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Craig, and of course his last name is Chaim Bickner, and of course we're talking about Aleister Crowley and the OTO. And of course, this was really one of the most powerful organizations in Europe and the United States in the early part of the last century. And the fact you don't know about it, of course, reflects how powerful this really is, because unfortunately these people have been working ever since then, working towards destroy the Christian foundations of Western civilization. And by so doing, of course, to open the people up to the demonic influences. And the demonic influences here, and so many of our young people, of course, have abandoned Christian morality, and of course we've adopted the sexual immorality, which of course goes right along with the destruction of every great civilization that has ever existed. And of course, so much of this occultism and sexual promiscuity, they sort of go hand in glove together, don't they, Craig?
Oh, they absolutely do. They are linked, just as you said, hand in glove. The interesting point too on the cover up of occult activities and how successful it is can be illustrated also by another man who was very closely tied to Crowley, and yet I've talked to people and they said that just can't be possible. If anybody knows anything about military history, they've heard of Major General J.F.C. Fuller, who was a brilliant military strategist in England. Well, that may be true, and you can still buy his books, and he's famous for his writings in that area. But it's very little known that in his early days, he became connected with Aleister Crowley and became one of his top people. Fuller actually responded to an essay contest that Crowley put out with his typical egomania, asking for somebody to write one praising his works and adequately interpreting his poetry. Crowley was a poet and considered himself a great poet, but a lot of what he wrote under the influence of various drugs was bargain basement swill. But Fuller wrote in and wrote an essay, a long one, which you can still get in certain occult bookstores, called The Star of the West. And he was talking about Aleister Crowley and called him the Star of the West. And Fuller is the one who came up with the term Crowleyanity as a replacement for Christianity. And, years later, you're mentioning the British connections with Germany. In 1939, I believe it was, Hitler had his 50th birthday party, and Major General J.F.C. Fuller was one of two Englishmen to go to Germany and celebrate Hitler's 50th birthday. Fuller came up with the Blitzkrieg strategy, and the Nazis adopted it, of course, rather than England, but he was the architect of that strategy. Now, some people say, well, this was youthful fascination that Fuller had with Crowley, but, I've never found any evidence that he formally abandoned his association with Crowley. He sort of distanced himself and let things go, at least publicly and so forth, but I think that's quite significant. You have a major military strategist in England, and he's that high up in an occult order. But of course, that's nothing new, is it? We mentioned Michael Aquino, and we've mentioned others in the past hour and a half. It's just not known to the general public. And I'd like to also stress that some people have said to me, isn't this unpatriotic of you to run down these leaders? My interpretation might be the same as yours. Mine is this, Dan, that I'm being more of a patriot. I love my country. I want my country to come back to its Christian roots, and I want this country to go back to the freedoms that God gave it. And I think that by exposing the enemies and the occultists and conspirators who have infiltrated and taken things over, that's a patriotic act. That's at least how I look at it.
I agree with you totally. Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, we have a fascinating book we're going to be carrying. We are carrying it now, called Regicide. And it's actually written by a man named Mr. Douglas, who had befriended a man with the FBI, with the CIA. He was in charge of a lot of their covert operations. And when this CIA man was going into the hospital for surgery, he gave Mr. Douglas some material he had, and he said, if I don't come out, you can open this. If I do come out of the hospital, I want it back again. Well, of course, he did come out of the hospital, but he was demented. He never was quite himself again. And so Mr. Douglas kept the material, and after the CIA operative died, he published it. In there is a list of 4,000 CIA assets or associates here in America. I'm not saying they're CIA agents, but they're people that the CIA looked upon as assets. Many of them were military. Some of them are very prominent professional people, and some of them are well-known media people. And it's a fascinating, fascinating list. That's the one that Michael Aquino is on. So that, of course, is a lot of other fascinating information as to why President Kennedy had to be eliminated and why people within the military were willing to go along with the Kennedy assassination. So it's a fascinating book, Regicide, and we'll be having several more interviews with Mr. Douglas, and I hope you'll be listening to them, because I think you'll get a tremendous insight into the forces that are at work within our society. And I'll tell you, that book, that list of 4,000 people living in the United States associated with the CIA is well worth the cost of the book, since I happen to know several of them, at least one of them personally, very, very well. I've known him for 40 years. In fact, he used to come many years ago to some meetings I put on. 40 years ago, he was at those meetings. So it's a very, very small world. Well, anyway, of course, our guest this evening is Craig, and we're talking about the OTO Crowley. And what was that? They didn't call it Crowleyism. They had another term for
Crowleyanity. Crowleyanity. I like to use that term because I think our culture right now is just swimming in a cesspool of Crowleyanity. And, one of the ways to define what Crowley was all about is to take the phrase that he used in his Book of the Law, and he said, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." Now, that really says a lot about our culture right now. I think you could almost put that out as the motto of how most people are living right now, and they're just out there to do what they will. It's really happened, and it used to be, there used to be a time when people felt that they had to answer to morals, to the Ten Commandments, and to God himself. But Crowley wanted to really replace that whole notion with this idea that each of us can find our own true will, as he called it. And he used the Greek word thelema for will. And so his followers today, by the way, identify themselves. They say, "We're Thelemites. We're followers of our own will." And they're rather proud of it. But the catch there is that when you go to follow your own will, he who commits sin is a slave of sin. There's no freedom there at all. It's a freedom through the truth, and the truth sets us free through Christ.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is we have something called the DARE program, which has been introduced into schools all across America, usually by police officers.
Yes.
And basically, it teaches children they have to make decisions. They have to learn to make decisions on their own. But, of course, what child is going to make the right decision?
Right.
You don't tell them whether you take drugs or not is your decision. No, drugs are wrong, and you should never, under any circumstances, in any way, even consider taking them. But instead, we teach young people, you make decisions.
Oh, yes.
And then we have the values clarification.
Right.
That comes right out of the pit of hell, and that basically is something like, well, now, you're in a lifeboat, and there's only room for six people or enough provisions, and there are eight people there. Who are we going to throw overboard?
Well, this was anticipated very clearly and explicitly by Crowley in something he wrote in the early 20th century called On the Education of Children. This is a very lesser-known document of his, but it's possible, Stan, to lay out that document and go through line by line and see the educational reforms we've seen throughout the 20th century with Dewey and the rest of them. They match very well with what Crowley was advocating. He was an early exponent of this whole value-free, outcome-based type of approach to things where students make their own decisions and everything is relative and it's better to expose them to sexual matters and all of the things that have undermined any sort of good academic and moral education in this country.
And, of course, the sex education we have here, they knew when they introduced it, this was not to prevent kids from getting experimenting with sex. It was to encourage them to engage in sexual experimentation.
Of course.
And from the very beginning, they knew exactly what was going to happen, but they had to sell it to the suckers. And they said, oh, look, we have one or two pregnant women, girls in every graduating high school class. Why, if we just gave these kids sex education, this wouldn't happen. And, in some high school classes now, at least in one school I heard about, a majority of the girls were pregnant. Now, that certainly, fortunately, is not generally the case. And actually, because of the pressure to have abstinence education in our schools, actually, the incidence of out-of-wedlock pregnancies, is actually down.
Mm-hmm.
But, certainly no thanks to the sex educators. And if you read their material, even from the Guttmacher Institute, which is the investigative arm of Planned Parenthood, they will tell you that the more sex education we have, the more sexual experimentation, the more pregnancies you have, that's exactly what they want.
Because yes, they want
to get abortions, and then they can kill the children.
That's right. And it's abortion's not merely a big business, well-financed and very profitable industry. Not merely that, but I'm firmly convinced that behind that entire operation is a demonic thirst for the young. And you see that thirst in Crowley's Book of the Law, where he talks about the demon speaking, says, "Sacrifice to me children, and the best blood is of a child." So words to that effect. Now, the OTO has fought in court and sued people who have said this is a direct advocacy of blood sacrifice of children, and they've said this is libel and so forth, and they say this is all code language for their perverted rituals and activities called sex magic, as they call it, or sex magic. But the fact of the matter is, even though those things go on in the OTO, it can't be denied that there are people who've taken these words as inspiration to do some abominable things, and one of them was Charles Manson. Now, it may not be well known, but he was a member of a lodge of the OTO in Southern California called the Solar Lodge, the Solar OTO. And Manson took quite literally some of the phrases in the Book of the Law. Mercy, let be off. It says to destroy people, have no pity, and so forth, and lurk, withdraw, be upon them. It's talking about savage, brutal murder. Manson went out and put that into practice. So even though the main legal OTO tries to say, oh, that was a sort of heretical OTO, well, if you look at their own writings, how can you argue with his interpretation? It's just doing what this book says to do.
And of course, what most people don't understand is there really is a lot of Satanism in America today. I mean, there was a strong satanic overtone as to the Son of Sam murders. There was a fellow in Southern California who was going around doing the serial murders. His name escapes me right for the present time. But people don't understand that many of these multiple murderers are deeply involved in the occult.
Absolutely.
And they know exactly what they're doing.
Not only that, but there are some indications that there have been some cover-ups in the government investigations of some of these matters. In fact, I'll tell you a story, Stan. I once was talking to a police captain, and he said, oh, no, these satanic ritual killings and so forth, this is all a bunch of... I don't know if he called it satanic panic or what he called it, but he said, oh, this has been investigated by the FBI, and there's just nothing to it. I later was having lunch with a man who had come from the FBI Academy and had been involved in the investigation of occult crime. And I said, you know, someone in New York was telling me that there are over 8,000 covens in the country. He said, oh, yes. And I said, and this person was telling me that child sacrifice is very real. And he said, oh, it's absolutely real. He said, in fact, we just had a case recently, and the confession led us to dig up this area, and there was the body of a small boy who had been murdered by this occultist. So these things undoubtedly do happen, and the fact that some police officers are willing to cover it up and to deny its existence is very disturbing to me.
No, not only that, but there have been people working within the FBI in very key positions who have denied this sort of thing.
Yes.
And of course, all the evidence is exactly the opposite. There was a book called Painted Black I've got somewhere in my library, written by a man who analyzed so much of the satanic activity in the United States, and it was being actively covered up
right
by people highly placed in our government. There are pedophile rings in the United States,
yes,
that are being covered up by people at the highest levels of our government, and that's the story of the Franklin cover-up written by John DeCamp.
Mm-hmm. And we have, that it's a good point that a lot of people, when they start talking about Satanism, sort of stop at the level of sensational stories. And I don't want to over-sensationalize the occult, because the most insidious form of the occult is that which is behind the scenes making policy decisions in government. And the most notorious example of that is the Roe versus Wade legalization of abortion under a Masonic-dominated Supreme Court. That, to me, was one of the most key triumphs for the satanic. But we tend to overlook that, some of us, when we're looking at Satanism, and we focus on people like Anton LaVey, who, diabolical though he was, didn't do, in my opinion, nearly the satanic damage that Supreme Court did.
I agree with you totally. And what people don't understand is the fact that they have planted their people at the highest echelons of our government, and the fact that they've been able to cover up here all across America for so many years, the fact that for 30 years, from 1941 to 1971, the Masons controlled the Supreme Court of the United States in majorities between 5-4 and 8-1. 8-1, 8 of the 9 Supreme Court justices were Masons.
Right.
Now, necessarily, we don't see that so much today, but we do see evil and wicked people there. Maybe they don't belong to the Masonic lodges, but they worship certainly the same God.
Right. And that's an important point, which God they worship there. They call it the great architect of the universe. Well, as we know, the true God doesn't create from materials. He creates out of nothing. And he, by the power of his word and of his almighty will and his power, he created the universe, and he didn't need anything existing. He was existing from all eternity and always will. And that's quite different from this Masonic conception of a great architect. They have the idea that this great architect had some existing material and rearranged it into the universe. Well, if you trace that idea out, there's only one being that would have the arrogance to claim that he could create by rearranging things that are already here. And that's the claim that Lucifer makes. He couldn't create out of nothing, but he wants to try to bump God off the throne, so to speak, and get this status. And that's exactly who Albert Pike, Grand Commander of the Masons, said they ultimately are worshiping, whether they know it or not. And he said, doubt it not.
Amen to that. And of course, you only need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to see the writings of Madame Blavatsky, the writings of Manly P. Hall, who makes it very
right.
clear in his book, The Keys of Freemasonry, that this is all Luciferian.
Oh, yes, The Lost Keys, I think it's called, isn't it?
The Lost Keys of Freemasonry,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he said right in there that when the Masons deemed ready, the seething energies of Lucifer are placed in his hands. Manly Hall was a very diabolical Luciferian figure and a Masonic leader, and he's called Masonry's greatest philosopher, and he made that statement. So if there are any Masons listening, I advise you to check out all of these references. Read page 321 in Morals and Dogma. Get dust off your copy of it by your Masonic leader, Albert Pike. Get the book by Manly Hall and look up what he says about Lucifer. And it's all right there.
And, of course, for sources of reference on all this, of course, you can get either my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, which will actually give you the page references for all of these things and where you can find them, or you can get my book, my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, which is an excellent overview, or better still, get both the book and the video, because then you will have the information. And I know that a lady called me one day. She told me that her friends was a Mason. She sat him down. He spent an hour and 40 minutes watching the video, The Brotherhood of Darkness. Didn't say a word, got up at the end and said, I'm going home to resign from the lodge. And because
Great.
Of the influence of so many people out there like yourself and others we have on our programs, the Masons are having real problems. The problem is that the older people who are not going to abandon Masonry, many of them are in key positions in our government.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, may people wonder why after the 10 people, the 10 managers in the House, at the Congress, they call them the managers for the impeachment hearings, and they just risked their reputations, they risked their professions in Congress to impeach the president, and they took the message over, the impeachment papers, over to the Senate, and of course, just so happened that Trent Lott, who led the Senate, was a 33rd degree Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're not going to put this on me. And then he went on to tell them they were going to have 3 days and they could call two or three witnesses. If you haven't read David Shipper's book, Sellout, you really need to read it. But of course, nobody would understand the significance of this unless they understood that Bill Clinton was the highest ranking demolé in the nation. And of course, the demolés are the recruiting grounds for people going into the Masonic order, although I don't think that Bill Clinton was ever himself a Mason. He was actually held the rank of the senior demolé of the United States.
Yes.
And you wouldn't think that a 33rd degree Mason would even consider allowing him to be impeached.
Oh, no, and it's one of the well-known, to those who've researched it, one of the well-known facts in Freemasonry that among the oaths they take at certain levels is an oath to cover for a brother Mason, be he right or wrong, to espouse his cause, to conceal all of his secrets and deeds. At one level, they say murder and treason accepted, and at a higher level, there are no exceptions.
Amen to that. We've got Mike on the line. Hi, Mike. You have another question? No, this is a different Mike, so go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hi. I just want to ask about the Shriners and what your guest might know about them, and why are they so benevolent towards children?
Okay, that's a very good question. The Shriners are a sort of party boy wing of the Freemasons, and you get to join if you're a high-ranking Mason in another order.
You have to be 32nd degree Scottish Rite.
That's correct. But it's not as innocent as it seems. Yes, they do some charitable activities, but there have been some investigations even on that, and most of the money that is raised does not go to the crippled children's hospitals. It goes right into the pockets of the elites in the organization. But some of it does go to good deeds for children. The thing to keep in mind is that good deeds and benevolent organizations can cover and provide a mask for other things. If you go back in history to the Mafia of Al Capone was famous for soup kitchens, and there were always acts of charity going on, and this led the good people of Chicago and the streets to think he was a good man. Just because somebody's dumping money into charitable cause doesn't mean the organization as a whole is good. And in fact, in the Shriners, they take some very grisly blood oaths. The God they honor there is Allah, the God in the Quran, and that is not the God of the Bible. And it is one of the oaths they talk about, may my eyes be pierced with needles if I violate this oath. So, you know, for somebody to enter these organizations, even if they think this is just drama, to swear these oaths in the name of God, or to swear these oaths on a Bible, as they do in many of the Masonic lodges around this country, is really a form of blasphemy. And it's not defensible, and it can't be purged by beneficial charitable organization activities.
Okay, Mike, anything else?
Has there ever been anything that's come out, perhaps, about pedophilia in between the Shriners and the children that they have in their hospitals, or anything subversive like that?
Well, I don't know of anything in that area, and you know, I don't want to paint a picture that says that everybody who's in the Masonic Lodge is a sex pervert. What the lodges tend to do is to gradually bring people along, first with this notion that it doesn't matter what religion you're in, you can worship any god in the world, and we need a one-world religion anyway. Then they go on and they promote secularization, the separation of church and state, and freedom of religion becomes freedom from religion, and they want to completely separate religion from the lives of, well, our daily lives as a Christian civilization. They don't want it to be a Christian civilization. They want it to be, quote-unquote, neutral. Well, we know that Christ said, he's not with me, he's against me. There's no real neutrality there. And then finally, for those who are very dedicated, they get ushered in to the deeper mysteries, and they get into the occult, and usually that's where the perversion gets going.
Okay, Mike,
the children's hospitals are too much like the foxes guarding the hen house.
Amen to that.
Right.
Time, Mike. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. And Craig, it's been a fascinating time. I hope we can get you on to some of our other programs, and love to get you back on this program again. You've got so much to say, and thank you for sharing it with us here at Radio Liberty.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
You too.
Okay, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program tonight. A great deal of information, very important information, and so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because we must turn back to God. If there's any hope for the preservation of this country, it will be a group of Christians on their knees praying to the Lord. And then we ask you to pray for our leaders, and certainly pray for our ministers, and please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back with you Monday. Until then, may the Lord be with you.